Today on Annenberg Radio News.
The deal they had told us, we couldn't do business here. To me, it seemed illegal.
Clinton Galloway describes the challenges of bringing cable television to South Central Los Angeles. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, April 11th, 2013. I'm Omar Shamoot. The endorsement battle is still raging in the race for Los Angeles mayor. Today, City Councilman Eric Garcetti and City Controller Wendy Gruhl each got some more high-profile backers, as Fiona Wang reports.
Mayoral candidate Eric Garcetti received endorsement from former city leaders outside of the First AME Church this morning. Among the supporters, former supervisor Yvonne Brass-Whitberg, former assemblywoman Greenmore, and five clergymen. Berg says she is endorsing Garcetti because of his experience at City Hall.
I'm here to support Eric Garcetti because I believe he has the leadership qualifications, and also he's been willing to do the right thing and make decisions.
The president of Black Community Clergy and Labor Alliance, Reverend Eric Lee, says he admires Garcetti.
I find him to be a man of vision, and Los Angeles needs a mayor that has a vision. Yeah. I find him to be a man of conviction. Los Angeles needs a mayor that stands on his convictions. I also find him to be a man of commitment, that what he says, he will do, what he believes, he will carry out, and that's Eric Garcetti, the mayor of Los Angeles that we need on May 21st.
Eric Garcetti is now 4% ahead of his opponent, Wendy Gruhl. Gruhl is backed by major Latino labor unions, especially those who earn minimum wage.
We're 100% confident that Wendy's going to win.
That's Lee Shelton, spokesperson for United Here 11, Hotel and Food Service Workers Union, which is made up primarily of Latino workers. Gruhl won them over when she met with the group.
When she came and talked to our members, it became very clear that she's a working woman just like us. She's demonstrated that she knows what it's like to fight. She's fought for better jobs.
Shelton said that despite the fact that Latinos usually don't vote in large numbers, they will come out to support Gruhl. With five more weeks to voting day, both candidates are busy gathering support. Fiona Wen, Annenberg Radio News.
Residents in Mexico City may not see salt shakers on their restaurant tables anymore. Mexico City's health secretary launched the Less Salt, More Health campaign late last week. It promotes healthier lifestyles despite the fact that salt is a key ingredient in Mexican food. A group of city planning commissioners is trying to lift a South Los Angeles fast food ban that's been in place since 2010. The ban regulates how close together fast food restaurants can be built. The planners say allowing more fast food restaurants into District 10 would liven and diversify the community. However, residents monopolized the commission meeting this morning to argue against the plan. Claire Pyrees reports.
Around 80 South LA residents attended a city planning commission hearing today to protest a new plan to add more fast food establishments, which they say would hurt local businesses. This provision would exempt the 10th Council District from existing fast food restrictions. Each person had a minute to voice concerns. Mary Lee is a West Adams resident.
That please make sure that for once, after a very long history of being disadvantaged by design, the South Los Angeles neighborhoods have an opportunity to have alternatives.
City planner Arthi Varma told residents that the community plan will benefit the neighborhood.
So we're really trying to create vibrant and diverse neighborhoods, inclusive prosperity for all residents and businesses, quality neighborhoods for the residents, diversity of uses that really enhance the quality of life.
Residents at the hearing are more concerned with their health than the consequences for business. Nicole Vick from the LA County Department of Public Health is concerned about obesity.
In the West Adams, Baldwin Hills, and Lemuria Park community planning area, 27.5% of children are considered obese. 32% of adults in South LA are obese.
Vic was especially worried about how much sugar children consume.
More than half of children drink at least one soda or sweetened drink a day. This is the highest consumption of sugary drinks in the county.
The plan would affect 13 square miles of land and about 183,000 residents. Claire Pyres, Annenberg Radio News.
Canada's justice minister is looking into the case of a teenage girl who hanged herself after she was allegedly raped and bullied. Bullying is a worldwide problem. Sarah Politis spoke with anti-bullying experts in Los Angeles to see how they're tackling the issue locally.
Tomorrow, more than 350 children will gather on the USC campus to participate in the anti-bullying summit, I Stand for Peace. Areva Martin is the co-founder and president of Special Needs Network. She says the summit will help students understand the seriousness of bullying.
We want to empower them. We want them to feel empowered to make changes on their campuses, and we want them to know that peace really starts with them.
This summit is unique because instead of just focusing on the victims, the summit is also reaching out to the bullies to find out what's motivating them.
Usually there's something underneath there. You know, there's problems at home. There's lack of positive role models. You know, there may be some emotional issues. There may be some mental health issues. There's just a whole range of things. So we want to embrace even those kids who are typically ostracized. We want them to feel loved, nurtured, and we want to surround them with the kind of support they need so that they can turn that behavior into a positive.
In South LA, there is a big concern with bullying that is gang-related.
So we're also dealing with, you know, kids just coming to and from school and not always feeling safe because of gang activity that may be in their communities.
The influence of gangs can have other negative consequences. Melissa Sherman, executive director of Beyond Bullies, says it impacts the role models young people choose.
There's something very powerful about a guy identifying with an icon who is a tough guy, who kills people. That kind of image is rampant. And I think with the entertainment capital, I think that hurts.
Sherman says California has the highest rate of bullying in the country. She believes there's an increase in bullying because it can be done 24/7 online.
Kids are not able to take a break from it unless preventative measures are in place. And so that person that you don't get along with in school is now that person who tells their friends to taunt you online.
Sherman says the way to end this issue is to get everybody involved and that schools need to enforce an anti-bullying policy.
Teachers need to be trained on how to identify and combat bullying and cyberbullying. Children need to be told right and wrong behavior, and that starts at home.
The summit tomorrow hopes to provide the foundation for children to make a change in their own school and community. Sarah Politis, Annenberg Radio News.
Tonight's temperatures will dip into the high 50s, with weekend highs expected to hit the low 70s on Friday and Saturday. Sunday should be a bit cooler. If you're heading to Coachella tomorrow, bring your sunblock. Bright sunshine is on the horizon, but the heat won't be blistering. A Saturday high of 91 is as warm as it will get. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we take a look at how one South LA establishment is helping residents fight obesity. The NFL draft is 2 weeks away, and while stars like Matt Barkley are sure to be high draft picks, hundreds of other players are just hoping to hear their names called. Will Tober has the story.
It's 6 a.m., cold, and the sun is just beginning to peek through a cloud-covered sky. And Tony Burnett's daily training session at Long Beach City College is already underway. Burnett works out with a small group of athletes, all aspiring to make it to the NFL.
They tell you, you know, if you do what you love, you know, work a day in your life. So, you know, it's a lot of work and it's a lot of stress and a lot of time put in, but at the end of the day, it's what I love to do.
They run and jump up stadium stairs, bound across the track, sprint with weighted vests, and perform repetition after repetition of agility drills. Burnett, who has dreamed of playing in the NFL since he was a young boy, has been training like this over the past month and a half to prepare for USC's pro day.
I took a week off after the bowl game to, you know, let my body heal up and rest a little bit. And that following Monday, I got out there and I've been out here ever since.
On March 27th, dozens of NFL scouts will have stopwatches and clipboards in hand for pro day, meticulously recording the results of physical tests like the 40-yard dash, bench press, and vertical jump. For Burnett, Pro Day will be the only opportunity he will have to showcase his talents and earn a spot on an NFL roster.
It's everything, you know. That's all I can really use as leverage is my Pro Day.
The reality is, most NFL scouts have never heard of Tony Burnett. As a part-time starter at USC, Burnett is well-respected at his school, but by no means a lock to be drafted. Still, Burnett invests his time, energy, and money in the hopes of fulfilling his NFL dream. What motivates him? His aunt. She has been supporting Burnett for his whole life, and an NFL paycheck would certainly help prepare for all she has done.
And today, you know, that's how I do it for my family, take care of my family, so, you know, I will be able to do that and provide for them.
Burnett knows the chances are slim. He's thankful that he graduated from a school like USC, and is confident that he could find another career if he had to.
I might not make it, so what do I do? You know, that's why I finish school, get my degree, you know, so I can go out there, you know, and use the USC network to make a high-paying job.
But that's not what Burnett wants. He's determined to make it, even if he does only have one shot. And while many players might buckle under that pressure, Burnett uses it to motivate him.
Every day I wake up and I'm sore and in pain, and I just get up and I think, like, you know, if I go out there and I don't give it my all, you know, that could be the reason why I don't make it. And I don't want to have to look back and be like, why I did not make it. I want to look back and be like, this is why I made it.
If he does make it, he'll be one of the lucky ones. According to the NCAA, under 2% of all college football players end up actually fulfilling their NFL dream. Will Tober, Annenberg Radio News.
In South Los Angeles, opportunities to exercise can be few and far between. For many residents, safety concerns, tight finances, and poor scheduling can stand in the way of living a healthy lifestyle. Molly Gray takes a look at these obstacles and one program that's trying to help people overcome them.
If you take a walk along the streets of South Los Angeles, you could go miles without ever encountering a public park, or even more rare, an athletic facility. In fact, if you type the word gym into Google Maps, only about half a dozen dots pop up in the 20 square miles between the 405, 10, 710, and 105 freeways. This lack of fitness space is bad, especially if you consider that South Los Angeles has higher rates of obesity than anywhere else in the city.
Diabetes, high blood pressure, obesity, a combination of all three.
That is Ivy Marks, a dietitian at St. John's Well Child, who works with children and adults in South Los Angeles. According to the California Endowment, 39% of South LA residents are obese. That's nearly twice as high as the rate for LA County. But why?
Lack of access to different things.
Access to healthy foods, medical care, and most importantly, safe places to work out.
If you don't feel safe going outside to play and you're stuck inside, they're going to be playing more video games or watching television.
So that's where the Baldwin Hills Crenshaw Plaza Shopping Mall comes in. Over the last year, the mall has built up a program they call Be Fit. Every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, fitness classes are held at the mall for absolutely free.
We've never had a class that wasn't full.
Sharon King is the general manager of Baldwin Hills Crenshaw Plaza and has been there for about 2 years. After coming to Crenshaw, she noticed that the mall's security staff was unusually busy helping with medical problems.
In 1 month, we had over 30 medical assists, and, you know, I'm accustomed to seeing maybe 2 or 3 a month.
She knew something had to be done, so they started offering a Zumba class on Tuesday nights. King says attendance grew each week until they quickly reached the 200-person maximum for the space. So it's a win-win. More people come into the mall, and people have a safe and free opportunity to work out.
I'm not an active person. Well, I wasn't prior to this.
That was Candace White. She has been coming to the classes for about 4 months. She brings along her sister, who was recently diagnosed with diabetes.
This has kind of changed, you know, my whole outlook with my physical day-to-day activity. It made me really pay attention to what I need to do to stay healthy and to not, you know, I don't want to be the next diabetic in the family.
And the class is designed so that anyone can participate. Victoria Balderas is a 65-year-old immigrant from Mexico.
Me gusta.
She says the class makes her feel good and gives her hope that she can still be healthy. Across the room, 10-year-old Asia Pittman wears a green belly dancing skirt with gold coins. Her mom, Aisha, brings her to class to help her foster good habits now.
It's very encouraging for her to encourage me to be here.
For Sita Hill, the best part about the class is the community. She says she knows she can come here and fit in.
A lot of people here we meet of all different ages, size, don't be ashamed. We have them different size from, we go, why is she here? She wears a size 2 to maybe a size 22 or, you know, whatever.
Hill also says she can't afford to go to a gym. So the fact that the class is free is helping her to lose the weight she gained when she quit smoking. Molly Gray, Annenberg Radio News.
Brothers Clinton and Carl Galloway realized the power of cable television early on. In the early 1980s, they tried to bring cable to South Central Los Angeles, an area in desperate need of information. When they brought the idea to City Hall, the Galloways say they encountered a pay-to-play system consumed by personal greed rather than civic empowerment. I spoke with Clinton Galloway about his new book, Anatomy of a Hustle, Cable Comes to South Central LA, which documents the brothers' story. So how did you get the idea to bring cable television to South Central?
The idea was really my brother's idea. He was a very bright guy, and he sat down and talked to me and told me that this was going to be the future of entertainment, and basically he thought the cable would become the new newspaper for the you know, the new generation. And I actually laughed at him when he first told me, because I said, people are going to pay to watch television. That's how we're going to get rich, right? He said, oh, of course, they're going to pay to watch TV. I couldn't believe it, but I said, okay, you're my big brother. I'll go with it. Because I worked for an investment banking firm, the next day I went in and asked to speak to an analyst for our cable division. And he told us what cable really was and what it could do and the power and the strength that cable was projected for over the next couple of decades. After hearing that and after hearing my brother, I was sold already.
Originally, was your goal just to profit off this, or did you have kind of a more philanthropic idea of bringing information to South Central?
Our goal when we started was to bring information to the public and to help, you know, the people who didn't have information accessible to them, improving educational opportunities, economic opportunities, and medical opportunities. The AIDS epidemic was coming on very strong at that point, and no one was saying anything in South Central about it. People were contracting AIDS and didn't even know what it was.
Tell us about your first meeting with an LA politician.
Well, my brother met him first. He went down to Robert Farrell's office. They just simply assumed they would just give us some help with the bureaucratic process. And a gentleman by the name of Channing Johnson, who happened to be the deputy to Robert Farrell, took my brother aside. And after he found out what cable was really worth, he and Councilman Farrell's attorney told my brother that we had to give them 2/3 of our company if we wanted to do business here. My brother was not at all going to accept that, and it was not something we were used to. But I think the thing that really upset us more was they felt they were entitled to take whatever we were bringing, whatever we wanted to do in South Central. They had no concern about what the benefits were to South Central. They were only thinking about short-term financial gains. Our goal was a long-term development of a developed distribution system for information.
And did it get better or worse after that meeting?
It only got worse. They brought in bigger and bigger players, you know, and, then the mayor stepped in, and, we were told by the mayor himself that if we didn't do the deal they had told us, we couldn't do business here. And I was shocked, because to me it seemed illegal. That is why we were able to go to federal court. It's historic when minorities have lost their ability to get any sort of cooperation from local governments, or local governments violate their rights. They seek the protection of the federal court system. And that's what we did. In 1986, the Supreme Court heard the case and came back with a 9-0 verdict in our favor.
And did you ever get to bring cable television to South Los Angeles?
No, we did not. In 1986, the case was remanded back to U.S. District Court, and again, it came back to the same judge who had dismissed it 3 years earlier, Consuela Marshall. She kept the case and held the case for 6 years, did nothing with the case, allowed discovery to go on. In 1992, she said she agrees with the Supreme Court, and the violation of our civil rights had taken place. So in order to compensate us for that, she gave us $1 and refused to allow us force the city to change the law that would allow us to build a second system here. So basically, we were locked out and our rights were taken. Because if your rights are only worth $1, what kind of constitutional rights do you have?
What made you want to put your story into a book?
Well, as my brother and I felt it was very important that we translate, you know, the history of what went on in South Central and our intentions and what we could have become in South Central in terms of developing things. The fact is that, you know, South Central still remains without an ability to develop its own identity. All images that the young people see are images that are given to them through the media. and black people control no media, therefore we control no images. My brother's passed, but one of the things he wanted me to do, as he told me as he was leaving, is to make sure I tell the story so that people know that we really tried, because we came from Birmingham, Alabama, and it's very important that people understand that the opportunities that we had here were not available to people in Birmingham or in a lot of places. And it was our obligation to take those, you know, opportunities, because with every right goes a responsibility. And when we want to exercise our First Amendment rights, when people seek to take them, it's our obligation to go after it and pursue the legal bounds to stop them. And the Constitution is there to protect the citizen from the government, not to protect the government from the citizen.
Clinton Galloway will be signing copies of his new book at Leimert Park's SO1 bookstore on April 25th at 7 p.m. You can't hide, you can't run. Students and community members from South L.A. will have the opportunity to learn how to be tech savvy at a hackathon this Saturday. It's sponsored by UrbanText, a nonprofit that teaches technology to young men. Oscar Menhivar is the group's founder.
The hackathon is really a community event. We want to be able to expose family members, young kids, and teens to what the real world of technology can be and how they can be part of it.
The day will consist of computer programming, coding, and web design.
So the school that we're having this event at is called Normandy Christian School. It's a small independent school, hasn't had a server or computer access for 6 months. This is why it's so important that we bring awareness about what's happening in South L.A. in terms of the digital divide.
Menhivar believes schools in South L.A. should have access to more technology to keep up with other schools academically. USC specialized journalism student Melissa Kaplan set out to finish writing a musical this semester, armed with prior experiences as a performing musician and songwriter. But Kaplan's five-month timeline has been derailed by an unexpected factor, her health.
I like to set high goals for myself. It feels great. I've never read any self-help books about purpose-driven lives, but I imagine I could stir up enough purpose to write my own book, based on the way I feel about my musical. But it seems the rest of me needs to catch up with my drive. At least that's what my body told me in mid-March when my acting class had a short showcase of performance projects. I went up there to do 8 minutes of the musical I had been practicing for months. Some had seen my first show at USC and told me I had vastly improved since my first time performing it. The weekend acting classes had really been paying off. Cool, I thought, in between sneezes. After the show, I was stuck in bed for about a week and a half with a weird illness I'd rather not name that my doctor says is triggered by stress. Between music and performance classes and working to support myself through said endeavors, it seems I didn't leave any time for regular meals or sleep. At this point, my musical isn't nearly done, and I'm close to graduating. But I'm the one setting these goals, not my professors. If I think of myself as behind, my body starts to wish it were back in bed. So the big lessons I've learned this semester have nothing to do with nuances in my performing, the art of storytelling, or new ways to write music. Here's what I'm taking with me after graduate school. Treat your body well, with good food, enough water, and at least 7 hours of sleep. And don't let your goals make you Moby Dick crazy. I'll be back after this nap. Melissa Kaplan, Annenberg Radio News.
Now we check in with Evan Budrovich to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Tonight we had the opportunity to speak to colleagues and friends of USC professor Mike Daniels, plus 1 year anniversary of the slain Chinese students, graduate students at USC. We spoke to friends around the campus. Also, there was a tree planting ceremony in their honor today at Viterbi, coming up on ATVN.
Thanks, Evan. That's it for this Thursday. We had help today from Eamon Oyeboke Osifo and Sam Weiser. Molly Gray is our producer. Our executive producer is Aaron Schrank. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Omar Shamoot.